From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ivanka Trump has been at the side of now President-elect Donald Trump from the start. Poised, well-spoken, she softened the rough edges and harsh rhetoric of her father on the campaign trail. Now there's talk of an unusual first daughter role for Ivanka in Washington, maybe in the White House itself. What will her imprint be? This hour on Point, the Ivanka Trump factor. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of Ivanka Trump? Have you bought her shoes, her clothes, her political line on women, families? Is there a role you would welcome from a powerful first daughter? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll talk about First Lady Michelle Obama's big exit interview with Oprah Winfrey. But joining me first from New York is Anne Helen Peterson. She's culture writer with BuzzFeed, who's been writing about Ivanka Trump and the latest Trump family headlines. Anne, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what's the latest? I mean, last week we saw headlines, CNN reporting that the First Lady's office in the East Wing of the White House would be renamed First Family Office or Family Office, and that Ivanka Trump might be working out of there. Hope Hicks, who's a spokesperson for the Trump administration or the in waiting, denying that. Where does that stand, Anne?
I mean, I think right now, like many things in the Trump administration, it's all pretty opaque. I do think that Trump relies on Ivanka in ways that we might not even understand in terms of influence and, you know, both in terms of Ivanka and her husband, Jared Kushner. And I think that Ivanka is poised to continue to wield that influence over her father. And it just remains to be seen exactly if she'll have a title, if she'll just be an informal advisor, if she actually is going to be sitting in that office. But she does seem to have a role that Trump's actual wife will not have.
Oh, no, we were told that Melania Trump, his wife, and their young son, Barron, would not be coming, at least not right away, to Washington. Does that remain the case, as far as we know?
As far as we know, and I believe that a lot of people have speculated that they will not move down whatsoever. But all that we know is that it's for sure for the extent of the school year, for Barron's school year.
So do we know if Ivanka Trump and her husband, Jared Kushner, are in fact moving to Washington? There's been a lot reported here on them house hunting in D.C. and Georgetown.
Yes, they are moving. And that has been confirmed, I believe.
And what about the earlier sort of alignment here that I thought we understood, but maybe it's changed, is that she would have a role in Trump's businesses, that his children, and I thought that at one time included her, would run his business while he was in the White House. Is that over now? She's in some other role and it's the brothers who are going to run the business?
Again, unclear. And, you know, Ivanka is said to be exploring ways that she can step away from her own company, both in terms of the clothes manufacturing and her personal brand of women who work, in order to take on a more official policy role. But again, I think that we know less than many people are willing to admit.
Here's a little bit from a September interview where Ivanka Trump was talking with Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly. And among the things that Ivanka Trump has done is kind of smooth out some of the rough edges of her father along the way. Megyn Kelly asked her about that, and here was Ivanka Trump's response.
Well, my father can be an equal opportunity offender. If somebody says something against him, he will speak his mind. And he treats women equal to how he treats men. He's said plenty of rough things about men over the years. I discourage him from doing that, as I discourage him from doing that with women. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that he doesn't treat us differently or with kid gloves shows the fact that he recognizes we're equipped to handle it and are able to do so.
There, Ivanka Trump in campaign season just a couple of weeks ago after her father's victory in that election, Fox News' Chris Wallace interviewed him on board his plane, and Wallace asked Donald Trump about the role Ivanka might play in his administration.
If you look at Ivanka, you take a look, and she's so strong, as you know, into the women's issue and childcare, and so many things should be so good. Nobody could do better than her, and I just have to see whether or not we can do that, and she would like to do that.
Anne Helen Peterson, I mean, we look back in history, and you got to look a long time back now until it wasn't a first lady in the White House in the conventional form of the wife of the president. But there have been many instances where you had daughter, niece, sister, playing that kind of hostess role. Go all the way back to Thomas Jefferson. His wife had died years before he was inaugurated. Rose Cleveland, and so his daughter stepped in. Rose Cleveland was filled that lady that role for her brother Grover Cleveland until he got married. Is there any indication that Ivanka Trump would be the kind of social lead for the White House, that first lady role, Anne?
I think so. I mean, that's the glossy exterior that Ivanka is very practiced at and would be very effective at, you know, that sort of soft politicking. And that is in some ways unprecedented. You know, even these historical examples of daughters and sisters taking the role, they were not, you know, necessarily advisors or politicians in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell how she advises her dad? Is it clear? Where her influence really lies, how great it really is. She presents. She was right there at the convention, but what about her actual weight?
I mean, again, it's all pretty opaque and more of absences than presences. You know, one thing that people have done is studied his tweets and the times that he has tweeted a lot of his most offensive or least backed up or, you know, incendiary tweets were oftentimes when Ivanka and her family, who are Jewish, were observing the Sabbath. So it's more that she wasn't there to kind of keep her finger on what he was doing.
A moment for the Sabbath, and there goes Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
She married Jared Kushner. She converted to Orthodox Judaism, and she's observant. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes. They observe the Sabbath in full.
Wow. And what about on the campaign trail? You covered her there. What was her presence like? Who was in the audience responding to Ivanka Trump?
Yeah, you know, I was never at an event where Ivanka was there, but she was oftentimes a way to get women who were at rallies to talk about politics. There's a reticence amongst many of what I call Ivanka voters, who are these upper middle class women from the suburbs who are not who we generally imagine the type of person at a Trump rally might be. And so for these women, you know, it's kind of out of the ordinary to even be at a rally, let alone talking about politics. It's not really in good taste. But if I said, you know, so tell me about your feelings about Ivanka. Like, do you own any of her clothes? Like, what do you think of her? You know, it's more of a celebrity question. And they would go on about how much they admired her, how wonderful she was. You know, I was at the Melania rally in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I met a 16-year-old girl who told me that, you know, she wanted to grow up and become a newscaster. And so every day she would go home and watch videos of Ivanka speaking on YouTube to learn the sort of poise and confidence that Ivanka had.
And there she was on the campaign trail and pulled out very prominently to talk about family issues, women's issues. Anne Helen Peterson is with us from BuzzFeed. Sadie Doyle joins us right now as well. Writer, her latest piece for Elle.com, the magazine and website titled Ivanka Trump Will Not Fix Women's Issues, She Will Distract From Them. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Sadie Doyle, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You say you see Ivanka Trump moving into not exactly a first lady role, but a princess role. What do you mean, Sadie?
Well, I mean that Ivanka provides and has always sort of provided Trump with a model of a particular exceptionalist white woman who's, you know, traditionally feminine enough to get, I would say, acceptance within his very openly misogynist politics. And we are really more meant to look at her and aspire to her or aspire to her lifestyle than we are meant to find any sort of substantive political content in what she's saying and doing.
The princess role, what is that? Is that a dig? Is that praise? How are you presenting that?
I think that, you know, I definitely think that there's a sexist way to call a woman princess and dismiss her. But I think with Ivanka, she has built a real brand that's specifically about her lifestyle. That's about, you know, what did Ivanka wear to the RNC? Can you buy it? That's about, you know, a website where we're presented with a lot of models who look a lot like Ivanka, enjoying these sort of glamorized upper middle class lifestyles. She's being presented as an ideal aesthetically and personally and in terms of the way she lives her life. But when you look at that ideal, you know, the closer you get to it, it's sort of it it breaks apart. There's no there there.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that, you know, women who work as a brand, and it's definitely something where, you know, she has a book coming out around this. It's something that she presented herself as sort of an expert on at the RNC in her speech. It's something that she, you know, has been potentially tapped to be in charge of in the newest administration. She will supposedly be advising her father on women's issues in childcare. If you actually look at that, you know, the launch point for the campaign, which is her website, it's a fashion ad. It's very brief interviews with women who say, yes, I have a job, and also my family is very important to me. They don't have any political positions that they're willing to share on camera. They don't mention any particular gendered obstacles in their work environment. And then, you know, once you're done looking at these women who do in fact work, you know, in 3 out of 4 cases, you can buy the clothes they're wearing, which are Ivanka Trump brand clothes, you know? It's a little bit chilling to realize that somebody might be in charge of advising the president on women's issues when they basically, you know, have the same detailed policy on women's issues as a CoverGirl ad, you know?
Is it clear that it's that thin?
I have not been able to uncover much of substance in it. And I do think that there are points where Ivanka has been challenged to go off her talking points. There was that infamous interview with Prachi Gupta in Cosmopolitan where they, you know, over and over pressed Ivanka to answer to the fact that the policy did not provide leave for anyone other than biological mothers. And what did that mean for same-sex couples? And what did that mean for adoptive parents? And, you know, Ivanka repeated the same talking points a few times and then stepped out of the interview. She may have been angry, or she may not have actually known what was the answer there.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the emerging role of Ivanka Trump, the first daughter who may, it's been reported, work out of the White House. Looking at her sway, her effect, the Ivanka factor. Aunt Helen Peterson is with us from BuzzFeed. She's been covering Trump rallies. She's been writing and thinking about Ivanka Trump. Sadie Doyle has as well, writer. Big piece in L, Ivanka Trump will not fix women's issues. She will distract from them. Brings up a kind of princess role. Or is it First Lady? You can join us this hour. What do you see coming with Ivanka Trump? How did you see her role on the campaign trail? Were you impressed? Were you wary? And what do you think of the first daughter, this first daughter, having a big role in the White House? She's a businesswoman. She's got a hashtag women who work handle out there. And here's a little bit from 2014. She's got her online lifestyle brand. Here's one of her campaign videos.
I'm an entrepreneur. I'm also a mother, a wife, and a sister. I'm teaching my daughter how to garden and my son how to walk. I'm the first one up each morning and the last one to give kisses goodnight. We invite you all to join the conversation and let's show the world what it looks like to be a woman who works.
And here's Ivanka Trump saying, don't call me a surrogate for Donald Trump.
I hate the word surrogate because what does that mean? Well, I'm not a surrogate. I'm a daughter. You know, I'm not dogmatically aligned with any party, and I share my thoughts with my father very candidly. But I do dismiss this idea of a surrogate because it's, I don't think it appreciates the role that I'm playing as my father's daughter, and I love him very much.
Not a surrogate, she says, but by all accounts, right in there when it comes to consulting. And we've seen the photos of her in meetings with foreign heads of state, the Prime Minister of Japan at this point. Listeners, what do you think? Charleston, South Carolina, Elizabeth is calling. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would just like to say that I think she's perfectly capable. She obviously has a great mind. She has a great business. And I think people are a little quick to dismiss her because she is beautiful and she does have a business. So there's going to be people that don't like her because she's beautiful. Say that I would try to diminish her role as a woman and as an advisor or influencer of Donald Trump because She is beautiful.
Does it matter to you, Elizabeth, if it's if there's any woman in the White House, or if it's not Melania, if it's Ivanka who's playing a kind of first lady role? Is that fine by you?
Great. I think Melania should. He's going to do things differently, and people need to accept that things are going to look different than they have before. And that doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing. If she wants to be at home taking care of Barron, then let her be at home taking care of Barron. If she wants to come and step into a role as hostess, that is time to do that. And if Ivanka wants to have more of a role of being alongside her father, like Rosalind Carter was, and helping to shape policy and sit in on meetings, well, that's been done before. And just because she's not married to her father, that she's her daughter, I don't think that that should be an issue.
Elizabeth, I really appreciate your call. Let me get one more here, and I'll take it to Ann and Sadie. Tom in New York, Hamburg, New York. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking a phone call.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I really actually find it egregious. Why don't we throw Paris Hilton in as well? She can live in the White House with her. You know, this is branding 101. Dazzle more brilliance or baffle more bullcrap. All she's going to do is she's going to go in there and parade around like she actually cares about women's rights. And she actually cares about child welfare. Well, maybe she does. But where was she for the last, you know, 20 years? I mean, she's never really championed these kind of issues before. All of a sudden, you know, statistics say this is what people want to hear. They want to hear that you care about X and Y. So to me, you know, long story short, I think it's egregious, and I really think the forefathers are rolling in their grave with the Trump presidency period. So.
Tom, I appreciate your call as well. And Helen Peterson, pick up these first two calls. Elizabeth in Charleston says, you know, what's the big problem here? She's smart. She's beautiful. Don't hold that against her. How does the Ivanka Trump role fit into the Donald Trump? Is there a pattern here? And, he's had several wives. Is she filling a role that we've seen before in Donald Trump's career?
Well, I think the point that she's a celebrity, and this is something that came up in both calls, is a really important one. Because I don't think that people discount her because she's beautiful. If anything, I think that people are compelled by her because she seems to represent a woman who does have it all. You know, who is beautiful, who is smart, who is accomplished, who has two kids, who, you know, doesn't rely entirely on the nannies, but also, you know, has run her own businesses and has maintained a family situation. And I think what, you know, celebrities do for us is model ideals. And she, through her very presence, shows that this is something that all women should aspire to, no matter that it's almost entirely impossible for that to actually happen for most women in the world.
What is that but ideal in her case? Is this a feminist ideal? Is it something else? How would you describe the Ivanka Trump ideal if she's representing one?
I would say it's very much not a feminist ideal. I mean, Ivanka herself has very consciously not embraced the term feminism because she thinks it's alienating. And for her business, she wants to reach as many women as possible. So she doesn't want to say anything that offends any woman. And so she says things like, I am in favor of, you know, maternal leave, because that is in many ways, you know, not a political statement. It's a, I am in favor of mothers. But it's in a lot of ways, it's in favor of a certain type of working woman, not all working women. And I think the thing about the ideal that she's representing is it's an impossible one, and it actually makes women feel worse about their place in the world, not empowered.
Does it lift women up? Does it lift men up? I mean, what about her relationship with her father, what it represents?
I mean, I think that relationships between fathers and daughters is great. Like, obviously, I don't think people are mad that there's a strong bond between a father and a daughter. I think what is more worrying is the way that Ivanka's message, and this is a term that Emily Nussbaum of The New Yorker used, that she deodorizes her father's more repugnant ideologies. And so people say, well, if he could raise a daughter like Ivanka, then he can't be a misogynist. And that's simply not true.
Sadie, she celebrates, in effect, what you might call the exceptional woman. Through her brand. What's the problem with that?
I think the problem is that, you know, Ivanka is not alone necessarily in what she's doing, even though she's in a uniquely powerful position that complicates what she's doing. There's always been, and there has been particularly a trend in the past few years towards what's been called femvertising or marketplace feminism, where you sort of, you take what are inherently political problems and then you try to solve them with, you know, consumerist solutions. You know, you may not have paid leave and you may not be able to afford your childcare, but here's, you know, a inspiring poster for sale on IvankaTrump.com. It's the role of the exceptional woman is often to sort of give a pass to actively anti-woman ideologies or policies that actively harm women by saying, well, look at her. Look, she's doing fine, so why aren't you? What is your problem? The exceptional woman exists to tell women that it is possible to pull yourself up by your bootstraps when we know that that's not really reality for most women. And I think that especially since Ivanka is now taking a role in an administration whose policies, like repealing Obamacare, like defunding Planned Parenthood, are going to impact so many women so harshly, there's really an imperative for us to look behind the message and look at whether that bootstraps lifestyle she's selling is something that's achievable.
I mean, it might be possible, but it is, I guess, a little rich coming from a billionaire's daughter. That's a strong start. Anna in New Orleans. Anna, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I think in part she represents very admirable ideals. Mom, she works. She is highly educated. She looks like she is poised, polite. At the same time, I don't think that she can relate to the typical working mom in regards to, I'm pretty sure she is not completely part of the daily routines that entail on a daily basis taking care of a family, getting the kids ready for school, making sure that their uniforms or clothes are clean, and washing the laundry, folding the laundry, cooking, cleaning, and at the same time carrying and completing like either a part-time or a full-time job on a daily basis. So I think what they're trying to show is a beautiful ideal, but at the end of the day, it's more like a selling point. I don't think it's something that they can completely, portray to the regular working parent out there, that it's something that they can either achieve or relate to.
Yeah. I mean, you're watching with a generous and critical eye at the same time. It's interesting. Appreciate your call, Anna, from New Orleans. Sadie Doyle and Helen Peterson stand by. Emily Jane Fox joins us right now as well, staff writer at Vanity Fair, has covered the Trump family a lot. And it's a pretty good beat on Ivanka Trump. Emily Jane Fox, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
What do you know about how far business is going to go here? I mean, she sat down with 60 Minutes for a conversation. Then, of course, that $10,000 or $11,000 bracelet that she wore was, you know, 5 minutes later for sale online. Do we know if that's going to go away when and if Ivanka Trump takes on a more central role under a sitting president?
I think sources close to her have told me that she is exploring ways to figure out how to step away from her business. By all accounts, she's going to step away from her business, and that includes her role both at the Trump Organization and within her own brand. I think her business now is going to be politics. She's made it very clear that that's where she's headed and that's where she wants to go for the various issues that she wants to champion once she gets to Washington, if she does decide to move her family there. And I think to her, selling dresses is going to be less important than the things she thinks she wants to do right now.
And what kind of role do you expect her to play? Is this going to be, you know, with the greeting party? If Melania's in New York and Donald Trump needs a hostess at the White House, is that Ivanka Trump? Or is it more importantly in the real substantive meetings making policy for the administration with it?
Ivanka doesn't want to be a hostess. I think Ivanka has made it very clear that she wants to be in those meetings. That's why she's been in those meetings in the last 6 weeks since he's been transitioning to the office of the presidency. I don't think she has any interest in playing the traditional role of the first lady. And even though Melania is not moving to D.C. right now, she's still the first lady. She's still able to serve some of the social roles that the first lady is going to play. She's going to be at inauguration. I think Ivanka really wants to go there and make a mark in the political realm. I don't know how realistic that is, and I don't know exactly what role that's going to be, because Ivanka doesn't know exactly what role that's going to be. I think she's still very much in the process of figuring that out.
Robert in Decatur, Illinois. Robert, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It seems that the conversation is divisive in that if the roles were reversed and Chelsea Clinton was now the first daughter lady of the White House, that a lot of these conversations perhaps wouldn't be had, and maybe the same comments wouldn't be used, even though she was Stanford educated, Silver Spoon, head of the Clinton Foundation. It just seems like it's a very divisive conversation.
I mean, maybe, but I think if she was coming, if she played a major role in the campaign and she was coming into the White House and lined up to play a major role there, even reported to have her own office there after everything with the Clinton Foundation, I can very well imagine people thinking about it, talking about it. I mean, that would have been, you're right, Robert, that would have been an unorthodox White House in any case as well, with the first gentleman or whatever Bill Clinton was going to be. I mean, Sadie Doyle, we don't know what role a Chelsea Clinton might have played there, but is it worth our time staring at Ivanka Trump and trying to foresee what's coming here?
Well, I do think, you know, that we have to appreciate that this woman is, in many ways, really key, not just to how Trump brands himself, but to everything he's done thus far. She's been a judge on the reality show. She's had a really,
yeah.
And, you know, she's had, you know, a major role in his business that, from what I'm hearing, maybe even bigger than she's ever been given credit for. She is key to what Trump does and what he is. And I think that on one level, you don't want to dismiss her or denigrate her or, you know, reduce her to merely, you know, some pretty airheaded blonde who doesn't know what she's talking about. But on the other hand, that makes looking at her and her accountability really crucial. You know, the fact that she is so accomplished, that she has been so indispensable to her father for so long, means that she can't step away from the ultimate ramifications of his actions for women, particularly if she's the one he's listening to on women.
So we're taking her seriously in that sense. Max in Newton, Kansas. Max, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hey, thanks, Tom. My question was just regarding whether or not there's any nepotism laws in her getting involved in politics.
Or in the White House itself, perhaps even in some kind of regular functioning capacity. And do you know the law on this? I mean, there are laws against hiring, but what I was reading was that if she didn't have a paycheck, then there might be no formal coverage against it in nepotism law.
Yeah, it's been really interesting watching. Like, people are very concerned about nepotism laws when it comes to Kushner's involvement, Ivanka's husband. Mm. But I haven't seen much in terms of Ivanka's involvement.
I mean, talk about a power couple. There's reporting that he, too, would be active in the White House with some kind of role there, potentially his own office there in the West Wing.
Yeah. Well, and he's played this brilliantly. I think there's been no interviews since Trump officially, like either none or very, very few. And yet he has wielded, by many accounts, some of the greatest power, greatest influence over Trump. But he has effaced or alighted himself from that campaign.
Emily, how would you describe the weight of Ivanka and, for that matter, her husband Jared's advisory capacity with their dad and father-in-law, Donald Trump?
Well, first I want to say that I think a lot of the focus on Jared's role and how that relates to nepotism roles rather than Ivanka is because it's been talked about that Jared will play an official role in the White House.
Yep.
So that is why the nepotism law has been invoked more talking about Jerry than with Ivanka, who will probably play not a formal role within the White House. I think Ivanka, since she has been a child, has been by her father's side on job sites, of course, on The Apprentice, within the Trump organization, and now within the campaign and the transition. Jared has been one of the most loyal figures throughout the campaign. He has been key to making many hiring and firing decisions on the campaign trail. He has been credited with a lot of the success of the digital operation, which won over a whole new swath of voters for Donald Trump. And within the transition, he has been at many of the meetings that Ivanka and her brothers have been at. So I think that they both have Donald's ear, but I think that it's worth noting that a lot of people have Donald's ear. And as we know, what tends to happen with Donald is the last one in is the kind of thing that sticks with him. So it's hard to say how important someone having Donald's ear is at any given moment.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the emerging role of Ivanka Trump, a first daughter who, it has been reported, may have an office in the White House, the office that Michelle Obama used in her time there. We'll talk in a moment about Michelle Obama and her interview with Oprah Winfrey on as she approaches the end of her time as First Lady. You can join us on the First Daughter front. Emily Jane Fox is with us. She's covered the Trump family for Vanity Fair. Anne Helen Peterson is here, culture writer at BuzzFeed, paid a lot of attention here. And Sadie Doyle, who's written a very interesting piece you can link to at our website. She looks at the princess role, she says, potentially for Ivanka Trump in the White House. Lots of people writing comments online here, many supportive, many not. Guy says, you know, not afraid of Ivanka because she's beautiful. He says, we're afraid because we don't want oligarchy. Well, okay. Here's another listener writes, what we have here are people who are out to line their own pockets and will be openly using the power of the presidency to do so with the complicity of the Republican-dominated Congress. Some see poise and are glad to have Ivanka at Donald Trump's side. Others definitely not. Emily, what about the relationship between these two, Donald Trump and his daughter Ivanka? She talked a lot about how sort of he raised me. So if you like what you see, he gets credit for that. Did he raise her? And what about, you know, Donald Trump has spoken about how hot she is or was. What's up with that?
Well, I think that Donald obviously had a less traditional parental role, especially when the children were younger. He himself has admitted that. The family had two nannies. Ivanka's mother's parents were also very involved, and her grandmother is also still involved with the family. So I think the day-to-day child-rearing tasks was not completed by either her father or her mother. I think their relationship has always been very close, but it's been one that's more akin to a boss and employee relationship than a father-daughter and a father-son with her two brothers. I think that as Ivanka has grown older and has gone on to work for her father, he obviously trusts her. I think she's long been thought of as the golden child, the favorite one. She's involved in high-level meetings and high-level decisions and high-level projects for the Trump Organization. And the fact that she is the one who is coming to Washington potentially, I think, says a lot about their relationship. In terms of the inappropriate comments, I think that that has a lot more to do with who Donald is than who Ivanka is.
Rebecca in Akron, Ohio. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, as a Jew, I'm impressed at how seriously she takes her conversion and how she's raising her family.
Mm-hmm.
But also as a Jew, I'm unimpressed by the substance. I feel like there's nothing there behind it. It's all for show. It's all just a pretty picture. But when she's asked the hard questions, she runs away.
I appreciate your call, Rebecca. Emily, how about it? Is that fair?
Well, I'm a Jew as well. She is an observant Jew. She takes her conversion seriously. Her children go to day school. They go to synagogue most weekends. They turn off their phone. They observe Shabbos every weekend. I think that there. I think that she is very smart. I think that she is educated. And I think the fact that she hasn't said much of anything is because she is the most messaged person I have ever come across, either as an executive or as a politician. That doesn't take a lot of courage to not say anything that's off message, but I think she is very diligent in some sort of strategy and some sort of greater plan. We don't know what that greater plan is right now, which is, I think, what's causing some discomfort in people, but there is one, and I think she's trying to work out what that is, and I think the fact that she has been tightly messaged on just staying focused on these issues related to women has worked for her, certainly has worked for her brand, and I think that she hopes that that will work for her as she goes to Washington.
It's not all wine and roses. There's a report just coming in here that, that Ivanka Trump was on a JetBlue flight leaving JFK in New York this morning with her family when a passenger started screaming at them on the plane, "Your father is ruining the country," saying, "Why is she on our flight? She should be flying private." And Ivanka reportedly here ignoring him and trying to distract her kids with crayons. And I see a piece from you in BuzzFeed here where you, you say, "But don't cry for Ivanka, fear her." Why fear her, Ann?
Well, that piece was written the day before Election Day. And I think a lot of people at this at that time were not only expecting that Trump would lose, but that it would be in some way shameful or that Ivanka's brand might be negatively affected. And she was very clearly wary of that as well. You know, she took a step back from making appearances with the campaign for a period of time and understood that her brand ultimately was more important than being very, very publicly aligned with her father. And even, you know, that that snippet that we heard earlier where she said, you know, I don't like the word surrogate because my father and I are not 100% aligned on all of these political issues. And I think she's used that as kind of like her – something that she says in order to say, like, without using specifics, I don't think that we necessarily shouldn't have to build a wall or, you know, some of the more egregious policies because she wants to remain palatable.
And so where does fear her come in then if that's her desire?
So the fear is that her ideology is ultimately about the way that – success and happiness and who deserves it in America should work. Those are ideologies that are very similar to her father's, and they are undergirded by this understanding that, as Sadie has gestured to, that you should be – everyone should be able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You know, her book, her first book, is called The Trump Card, and she calls it that because she says that everyone in America has been dealt a Trump card, and they just have to decide what they're going to do with it. And even though she admits that she has had privileges, she's saying, listen, we're all equal. So if you just work hard enough, you can reach a similar point of success. And that's, you know, with the systematic inequalities that we have in our country, that's just not the case.
Not that simple. Sadie Doyle, we just got another half minute here. Last thoughts on Ivanka Trump as she lines up for some kind of role. We'll see what in the White House. What imprint, what impact do you imagine?
I think that Ivanka, you know, as many of the women today have said, is going to be assigned the role of, you know, the Trump administration's friendly feminine face. And I think we should always be willing to look behind that particular face at how the majority of women who are not Ivanka and who are not like Ivanka are being impacted.
Sadie Doyle, she's written for Elle.com. And you can link to her web, her very interesting piece there at our website, onpointradio.org. With us today from New York, Sadie Doyle, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you.
And Helen Peterson at BuzzFeed, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And Emily Jane Fox, staff writer at Vanity Fair, thanks for joining us, Emily.
Thank you.
In a moment, First Lady Michelle Obama and her legacy. She's spoken with Oprah. This is On Point. First Lady Michelle Obama has spent 8 years at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. As her time there nears its end, she's sat down with Oprah Winfrey for a farewell interview. It aired this week. Krista Thompson, features writer for The Washington Post, has been paying attention. She joins us. Krista, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for being here.
Hi, Tom.
What was the Michelle Obama who sat down with Oprah? How did she sound? How did she come across after 8 years in that job, Krista?
You know, it was the Michelle Obama that we have come to know and for many Americans love. You know, she is still extremely popular, according to our polls. She was candid. She was also sober in her political assessment. and clearly looking forward to what life as a person who has become a public figure, what private life would be like for her again. You know, reflected on raising her daughters there, on some of the low points for herself, and gave more of a sort of political assessment than we've heard from her previously.
Talk about that. What did she see in the politics that have unfolded in the last few months?
You know, she and Oprah Winfrey are old friends, and Oprah asked her about whether or not she thought that her husband had lived up to the promise of hope that his campaigns had put forward. And Ms. Obama said that she thought indeed he had. And she said, "We know that he did because we feel the difference now." And she didn't go much further. She said that she stood by the things that she said during the campaign. And if you remember, she campaigned vigorously against Donald Trump and for Hillary Clinton. And she noted that many people are still reeling from the kind of caustic language that was used during the campaign. But she also added that, you know, as first ladies before her opened their door and provided her with wisdom and advice, that she has promised to do the same thing for the future first lady.
Maybe felt that she hadn't had the full welcome when she got there, but she was determined, and the White House was, to do that for the Trumps. Here's a little bit from that interview Oprah had with First Lady Michelle Obama. Here she talks about why she'll support the president-elect Donald Trump's transition.
No matter how we felt going into it, it is important for the health of this nation that we support the commander-in-chief. Wasn't done when my husband took office, but we're going high.
We're going high. When they go low, we go high. It was also her line during the campaign season. Wasn't done when my husband took office. Was she talking there about the transition from the Bushes, Krista, or was she talking about the reception that Barack Obama got more broadly in Washington when he took the oath?
More broadly in Washington, she did credit Laura Bush by name and the Bush administration for helping with the transition. But she talked about, you will recall those early weeks and months, those first years in office, and the kind of opposition that her husband's administration faced from the Republican Party, up in including, you know, pledges to make him a one-term president. And so she is saying that she is not supportive of that kind of stance from Democrats as, you know, we transition to Donald Trump's presidency.
Talked a lot about hope, but also about its absence. This was a kind of a jab at the incoming Trump administration. You talked about why Americans should hold on to hope. But here also Michelle Obama with Oprah.
See, now we're feeling what not having hope feels like. You know, hope is necessary. It's a necessary concept.
Some hardball right there, Krista. What I guess she means, in her view, with the election of Donald Trump, the absence of hope.
Yeah, and you know, Ms. Obama is a political figure in so many ways, but has carefully stayed out of the partisan fray. And you can see that even with her choice of language there, right? You know, she doesn't mention Donald Trump by name, but she said enough during the campaign that we know where she's coming from and we know what she means there. And she did talk about feeling challenged as a citizen because of the tone and tenor of this campaign and some of the just the negativity of it. And so, you know, she came into this, as she said, a reluctant first lady. This wasn't something that she saw for her life, but took the role, built an enormous platform. I think we're going to continue to see her be active in public life. But she also, Oprah Winfrey asked her several times if she had designs on running for office, and she said no.
Do you have any sense, you cover the family, you've covered them for a mm-hmm. long time, any sense of what she may do in her post-White House years? Her daughters are growing up now. She was very active as an attorney, a lawyer herself, before they went in. What about her future plans? Any sense?
Yeah, you know, it seems that she is still figuring that out for herself. We do know that she has many offers, and you can imagine the range of opportunities that are before her. She has committed herself to continuing to work on some of the issues and initiatives that have marked her time as First Lady. So we know supporting military families, healthy eating and lifestyles for children and the American public more broadly, pushing higher education and that more young people attain higher education and also education for girls and women around the world. So I think she's going to continue to keep a finger on those issues. Interesting thing when Oprah asked her about her legacy as First Lady, what she thought her greatest legacy was. And she talked about being a role model for young women, having had the life that she had before the White House, and particularly for young African-American women graduating from Harvard Law, being a nonprofit executive, a corporate lawyer, all the things that she had done, and bringing that with her to the White House and choosing to live out loud, as she said.
Greatest accomplishment. Here was Michelle Obama with Oprah Winfrey.
One of the greatest things when I see young women, particularly African-American women, but young women generally, seeing somebody educated, strong, outspoken, just seeing that.
Just seeing that. Krista, how has Michelle Obama changed during her 8 years in the White House? How would you describe that evolution?
It's been an interesting arc. You know, it's clear that she got more comfortable in the role, more comfortable with the platform, that she has described being First Lady as like having a bright light, and you get to decide what to stand in front of and shine that light on. And so in the early days, it was clear she wasn't sure where she wanted that light to point. But as time went on, she became much more comfortable in harnessing that light and directing it to the areas that that she wanted Americans to pay attention to.
Unusual with a daughter still in school there in Washington, the Obamas will stick around Washington. Presidents and their families usually clear out. Do you know what their immediate plans are?
Well, we have a sense of the neighborhood that they're going to be moving into. I mean, clearly they have both said that they will leave Washington for a vacation somewhere warm. But then we expect them to be a part of our community here.
A brand new kind of configuration there with a sitting president and an immediate past president, both in the same town. Krista Thompson covers it all for the Washington Post, features writer there. Krista, thank you very much for being with us today.
Glad to be with you.
Krista Thompson of the Washington Post. Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Halima Gikande, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Maeve Pajess, Sarah Platt, Tanya Rally, and James Ross, with help from Hadley Green and Eve Monti. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.